I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection with the designated savior of American musical theater, Audra McDonald.
When a beam lies sleeping in the palm of your hand, you're bewitched and deep in love's long-looked after land. Love comes calling on you. Sleep on me, don't wake up. Can't believe what just passed. He's mine for the taking. I'm so happy at last.
This is Audra McDonald's revival of a classic song, Asleep in B, that survived a short-lived show called House of Flowers from 1954. Music by Harold Arlen, lyrics by Truman Capote. It's only one of innumerable tricks in the bag of Audra McDonald's gifts. She has re-inhabited the signature tunes of pop divas, Judy Garland's The Man Who Got Away, for instance, and Barbra Streisand's Any Place I Hang My Hat Is Home. But she's a conservatory singer from Juilliard, trained on the concert repertoire, who also suspects that there's an opera singer inside that voice trying to get out. Audra McDonald is also a show-stopping stage performer out of the Ethel Merman, Mary Martin, Julie Andrews mold, with a significant twist that she is artistically invested not in revivals, but in a new generation of composers writing a different sort of musical theater. More and more of those composers want to write their stuff for her, which is to say that Audra McDonald is what in sports would be called a franchise player. Show business is full of fantasies built around Audra McDonald's voice and talent. Dreams of building narrative musical shows about people, not cats, for a change. Maybe rebuilding a whole Broadway musical institution that seems to be heading into retirement with Stephen Sondheim. Connection listeners, have you had enough? Andrew Lloyd Webber, are we ready for something classic and altogether adventurous and individual and fresh? Make the connection with Audra McDonald at 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Welcome, Audra McDonald. Should we just listen to the end of this beautiful song? Let's do it.
Told me I walks with my feet off the ground when my one
Thank you, Harold Arlen. Thank you, Truman Capote. Thank you, Audra McDonald. I mentioned that you sing Harold Arlen. It's only one of the things you do, but let's talk about him. You do a lot of Harold Arlen.
On the second album, yes, I do. He was one of those composers for me, you know, he had a very sort of a soulful quality and he was sort of right after the sort of big heyday of musical theater composers such as Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart. And he had very much, you know, for this great guy, he had a lot of sort of soulful, sort of almost sort of jazz and blues qualities deep down inside of him that he was really able to sort of explore and really bring to fruition incredible works like The House of Flowers. Also, I think he was one of those composers who was starting to stretch the style a little bit, in that he I think was quoted as saying, you know, a song is finished for me when it's finished, not when it's reached the form that it's supposed to reach. You know, you have your you have your verse, you have your chorus. Mm-hmm. He was somebody who said, you know what, maybe there is an extra verse at the end of, you know, the song because I haven't finished saying what I need to say yet. So he was, I think, one of the first of the ones that sort of started to play around with the accepted form in musical theater at that point.
Will you ever sing Stormy Weather?
Oh, I've sung it in my bathroom, and maybe someday I'll sing it. It's hard. That's another one that's going to take a couple of days. It's going to take a couple of years for me to attack because I so associate it with Lena Horne.
Well, doesn't everybody? Yeah. But people associate the man that got away with Judy Garland, and that didn't stop you.
No, well, that took me years to get to that one, actually. And that one is because I also sort of approached it from a much different standpoint. It's a quiet version, and it's a sort of a silent sort of homage to Judy, because there's no way you can sing as loud as Judy. Nobody can.
Well, there are other things, and maybe we'll get to them. I Had Myself a True Love. Mm-hmm. Is Harold Arlen. Any Place I Hang My Hat is Home is Harold Arlen.
St. Louis Woman, yeah.
I Never Has Seen Snow. But, you know, there's so many things to talk about, especially about you and how you got to New York from Fresno and the girl, Audra McDonald, you know, in the bathtub or otherwise, dreaming of doing exactly what you've done. 3 Tony Awards, 1 more Tony nomination, pending, and you've just turned 30?
No, give me some time yet. I turned 30 in July.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
didn't
okay.
To get
I got to hold on to these last 2 months of being 29.
But I also want especially for you to talk about what this new musical theater and the struggle to bring it to life is all about. We'll get to that. Maybe we ought to listen first to something sort of on the cusp or on the threshold there. Out of Ragtime?
Oh, absolutely. It was Your Daddy's Son, probably. Probably, yeah.
Yeah?
That was my only song in the show.
well, it's got to be you. Music by Stephen Flaherty. Lyrics by Lynn Ahrens.
I sort of like to put them right on the cusp of the... They're certainly new musical theater composers, but they sort of broke through. They were sort of accepted commercially. And I think that may be sort of the barrier between the new musical theater composers and the ones like Lynn Ahrens and Steve Flaherty. They had another hit some years back called Once on This Island, which was sort of a musical fable. So they've been very prolific and very successful in a sort of a larger sort of commercial venue.
Let's listen to the song that won one of Audra McDonald's Tonys, Your Daddy's Son, from Ragtime. Takes a sort of acting tour de force, too.
Absolutely, with a piece like that.
Tell us what's going on here.
Well,
a pretty picture.
No, in the story of Ragtime, basically, Sarah, my character, was sort of the one who sort of threw the gas on the fire. She had a baby out of wedlock with a man named Cole House Walker Jr., and she ran away from him and, in her fear, ended up having this baby by herself. In a field next to this sort of all-American family home in New Rochelle. And so she ends up burying the baby in the garden of this family. And she's at this point, she's trying to explain to the child why she did it, which of course she can sort of find no words for, and the only excuse she can come up with is because you look too much like your father who had broken my heart. So, and actually when we first went to the first workshop of Ragtime, when we were first starting to work on the piece, Lynn Ahrens and Steve Flaherty didn't have a song for Sarah, and they felt that they really needed to do something so that the audience could understand her side of the story, so that they could go along on her journey and be in her corner, as it were. So it was sort of a great inspiration for them to write it, to give Sarah a chance to really talk. Because other than that, she's sort of a mute. She really doesn't say much in the entire show, and then she's dead by the end of the first act. So
your characters have a way of disappearing.
Disappearing, dying.
I want to get to the new stuff in American musical theater, but I'd also like you to just talk a little bit in the Arlen song, as in Your Daddy's Son, talk a little bit about the facets of this voice that you're playing with. You spoke about jazz and blues. There's obvious conservatory training here in the formal sort of way. And everybody says you can belt, too, in the Broadway mode. How many tricks are there in this bag?
I don't think it's so much about tricks. I think it has more to do with the fact that I was raised in a family of musicians, and I was sort of taught that there were no limits. And so maybe it was sort of one of those ignorance is bliss things. I never knew that my voice shouldn't be able to do all these different things. And the more I performed as a child, the more I learned about my voice. And I started lessons very early. I started taking voice lessons when I was about 11 years old. And once again, I had very smart teachers who just, their main goal for me was to keep my voice healthy. And since I feel that my voice is directly, as with anybody, I think, you know, whatever sort of their artistic mode of expression, it's directly connected to, you know, your soul, my dramatic soul, that my voice is fueled by that. So I feel that they're interconnected. So in a way, that also sort of helps, that there doesn't feel like there's really any restraints on it. Certainly going to Juilliard helped me to, you know, sort of learn more about the classical style. And actually, that's when I started to feel restraint. Actually, that's the first time that I started to feel like maybe my voice shouldn't be able to do everything, because that was the first place that I was learning that you shouldn't be able to sing all these different things. And if you can, then that means there's something wrong with you.
What kind of music and what kind of singers did you feed on as a kid?
As a kid, I listened to a lot of Sarah Vaughan, a lot of Ella Fitzgerald. Beverly Sills was big in my household because of my mother. She really enjoyed Beverly Sills. Leontine Price was big. And, of course, Barbara Streisand and Judy Garland. Not so much Judy Garland until I got older, but definitely Barbara Streisand. She was a major influence. I was sort of a geek in my family, you know. A lot of other kids my age were listening to, you know, Duran Duran and things like that, and Madonna, and I had no interest.
Did any guy singers leave a mark? Of the, you know, the Johnny Hartman or...
Actually, I didn't get into Johnny Hartman until much later. If there were any male singers, let me think. Oh, well, Bobby Short. I really sort of dug his style, and I just certainly the music he chose to perform. But that's about it. Not so much. More of the, I was into the chick singers, as it were.
I think we should just listen to a little bit of a young composer of sort of royal blood, Adam Gettle. Adam Gettle is the grandson
of Richard Rodgers, right.
And he's done a number of songs with you and for you, but I'd love to listen to a song you recorded on your second album called Was That You?
Can seem contented with a smile invented to hide when a heart is blue. Was that you? Did I create him? Did I lose him in my reflection? A sweet I was clinging to was the
nor did I embrace desire. Love was meant to lift the heart higher.
Audra McDonald, tell us something about Adam Gettle.
Adam is an incredibly talented composer, and it's certainly obvious that there's something in the genes there. Adam is someone who has had... He went to Yale, and he has an incredible sort of classical background. He started out as actually a boy soprano at the Met when he was a kid. But he's one of those composers who is not really interested in... typical subject matter, you know. I mean, this is obviously a love song, but he's writing it. Was That You as a love song, but he's writing it from the vantage point of, I think I was in love, but I wanted to be in love so much that maybe I just made it all happen in my head. I mean, not many people will write a song about that. They'll just write, "Oh baby, I love you," or "Oh baby, why did you break my heart?" Adam gets more into the sort of psychological aspect of it, of, well, why do I love you? I'm not quite sure. He wrote an incredible musical called Floyd Collins, which was based on, I don't know if you know that story, based on the Kentucky caver, Floyd Collins. It's because it became a huge media circus. He got trapped in a cave, and this huge media sort of circus developed around the area where he was trapped as they tried to rescue him, and it became the first sort of exploitation, like, you know, sort of real TV, those sort of things. It was the first sort of version of that in the 30s. And it talks about how this man ends up finding faith as he faces sort of his impending death. And those are the things that interest Adam. But his musical compositional style is very rich in harmonic in his use of harmonics. It reminds me a lot of sort of Debussy and sort of the French composers, Poulenc too, especially in this rich musical language. And, you know, he's another one of those composers who hasn't quite made it in a commercial sense too. I think in this day and age of sort of where we're losing the mom and pop producers on Broadway, and we're sort of being taken over by more of the sort of the corporate producers, it's getting rarer and rarer for producers to take a chance on sort of an unknown.
We're going to come back to this question of the future of the musical theater and these new musical theater writers. Audra McDonald is our guest. 3 Tonys in her bag already, a 4th nomination for Marie Christine. She's performing tonight at Sanders Theater on the Harvard campus. 1-800-423-8255 makes the connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Bill is calling from Providence, Rhode Island.
Hi.
Hello, Bill. Welcome.
I'm really delighted to have a chance to talk with Audra. I teach voice and music theater here in Providence, and we've never met, but we have a lot of mutual acquaintances. I wanted to talk about a couple of things. First of all, I have a real frustration with some of my students who aspire to do music theater, in that they really don't want to, or they are reluctant to get voice training. And they're actors for the most part who want to do music theater, but they seem to be afraid of the voice studio for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. They're afraid that they're going to come out sounding like opera singers. I don't know what.
Wow.
And I really would love to have Audra tell everybody who aspires to do this the value of maintaining a healthy voice through voice training.
Well, it's that you just said it right there. If you don't know how to use your instrument in a correct way, you'll never make it, or you certainly won't have any sort of long career on Broadway. Broadway's very difficult. You're asked, especially in musical theater, you're asked to do 8 shows a week, and we all know the flack that people get for not performing if they can't, you know, live up to their commitment of 8 shows a week. I was one of those people who got a lot of that sort of flack because it's very easy to blow out the voice if you don't know what you're doing, and then you know, you're only given one instrument, and once it's gone, and you can't have surgery to get it back. That's it. And also, it just helps you to. It's sort of like, I always compare it to ballerinas or anybody who wants to dance. They have to start with a technique. And they all take ballet, even though they may end up wanting to be a modern dancer, or, you know, or they want to be a jazz dancer, or whatever. They all start with that technique, and it's the same thing with voice. You need to learn about your instrument first, and then you can take it into whatever direction you want to.
Bill, could I ask, what is the fear of learning opera technique or sounding like an opera singer? I mean, Audra,
I think it's really a prejudice, and in the way that I have always approached this myself. I mean, I do both opera and musical theater. Mm-hmm. I'm a crossover artist, and I think that there really is no distinction in terms of vocal training. Good, healthy singing is good, healthy singing, and once you have a sense of your instrument. I believe
what does a young
really
singer
can do all kinds of things with it.
Right.
What does a young singer mean when he or she says, gosh, I don't want to sound like an opera singer?
Actually, I think I can answer that.
I thought you did want to sound like
or
do.
No, I did not when I was at Juilliard. That was my problem. I wanted to hold on to my own sound, but I knew that there was a lot of things that technically was keeping me back from, you know, having a healthy sound. And there is a difference. I mean, that I understand that fear, and that comes in what kind of teacher you choose. If you choose a teacher who's interested in cultivating your particular voice and maybe something to tell your students, and I'm sure, you know, you're obviously if you're a crossover artist, you understand this, Bill, is to never sort of take that student's natural sound away from them. And I think that's what the biggest fear is. Please don't make me sound like, you know, like Franey. I don't want to sound like Franey. I want to sound like myself. And so if you can find a way to teach that technique and get them, like we like to call it, lined up vocally in a healthy way, but not to take away their own sound, that I think will help to sort of assuage that fear.
Bill, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. The Audra McDonald connection. Jim is on the line.
Good morning.
Morning, Jim.
I have a question regarding the ongoing debate about opera versus musical theater. a couple weeks ago, Stephen Sondheim was interviewed, I think, by Ned Roram at the 92nd Street Y. And when he was posed this question, he responded that the difference really rests more in the audience expectation as opposed to the material itself. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know, I have a couple questions, or a two-part question, if you agree with that assessment, and if you do agree with it, why you prefer to stay in musical theater environment and not cross over into the opera one, even though there are clearly roles that would be suited to you or that would probably be exciting for you to perform. Mm.
Well, I agree with Mr. Sondheim's assessment that I don't think that's the only distinction, but that certainly is a major one, that it's a lot of the audience expectations. Certainly I can, you know, speak from experience with Marie Christine that a lot of people's problem with the people who came mainly from musical theater, where the applause breaks, there was no buttons. We never knew when to applaud. We never got a chance to. You know, and all the rest of, you know, all the recitative that happened in the show, they were always singing, you know, why didn't they just stop and talk? I think that sort of, if you go in expecting, you know, applause breaks and
the hit song.
Yeah, the hit song, a memorable tune, although I disagree, I think there were some memorable tunes in it. I think that he is making a very correct statement in saying that is definitely going to interfere.
But where is the line? Where is the line, say, between Marie Christine, which was called musical theater, and John Harbison's Gatsby, which was called opera?
That's the thing. No one seems to know how and where to draw the line. I had a musical director who's...
Dawn Upshaw's in one, you're in the other, and you,
right.
And you work together on CDs.
Yeah, we're photo negatives of each other. I had a musical director who said, you know, there's no way you could have gotten an opera singer to sing the sort of music that we had to sing in Marie Christine, because it was a lot of belting that was called for that wouldn't... no one would stand for that in the operatic world. Hmm. I guess in answering the second part of the question as to why I tend to stay in that is because I stay in musical theater because I feel that there's more of an opportunity to express myself in a dramatic way than there is in opera. In opera, you really have to stay lined up, and it's mostly about the purity of the tone. And if you can have the purity of the tone and the dramatic expression, that's great. But dramatic expression comes second, and that's something I've never been able to sort of reconcile.
You think that the difference then rests more in the performance style than in the actual material, written material?
I guess so. Yes, I do. I do agree with that, that it is more in the performance style than it is, because like you said, like Sondheim said, with the audience expectation, it has to do with, you know, that purity of sound, and that's not all they're interested in, but that's what they're coming to expect when they go to an opera.
I only remember reading the headline, but didn't Sondheim say that the American Musical Theater as a form of the Guys and Dolls variety, say, or even West Side Story, is over?
Yes.
Let's go into the break with a marvelous Jerome Kern song. It's one of my favorite trivia questions. We'll answer it after the break. Who wrote the lyrics to this famous song by Jerome Kern? It's Bill, sung by Audra McDonald. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI, Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Audra McDonald Connection.
We are ruled by our brothers. We are ruled by our husbands. We jump at the voices of our masters and do as they say. We are bought and traded along with cattle and cotton. We have to be beautiful, and it helps to have a dowry of some kind. We have to show humility and have the presence of mind to never complain. And they say it's our fault. We were thrown out of the air to be turned into salt. But there's a way back to paradise. There is a way. Study your men. Learn what they lack. Sweet mixture rope before you attack. Put up a front and then slip through the back. Be on your way back to paradise.
This is our guest, Audra McDonald, singing the title song from her first CD. The song is Way Back to Paradise, from the musical Marie Christine. The music and the lyrics were written by Michael John Lacusa. This is a song that has backup vocals, believe it or not, by Don Upshaw.
Am I audacious or what?
Well, here I am talking to Audra McDonald, so we can all, you know, presume. That song, that musical, will serve as a kind of fair sample of what the new musical theater is about. Let's talk about it. What do you love about it? What are the problems? What were the problems that brought Marie Christine down?
Well, I think, to answer the first question, I think it is indeed where the future of musical theater is going, in the fact that it's a very unique, singular voice. I'm not saying that everybody's going to write like Michael John Lacusa. I don't think anybody can write like Michael John Lacusa. It's a singular voice, and I think what he's able to do in blending the drama with the music, and the music really serves the drama of the moment. That's all he's interested in, is serving the character through the music, and not, you know, having a song just draw attention to itself because let's write a great hit tune here. And I'm
Hey, Sydney, what is wrong with having a great hit tune?
There's nothing wrong with that. that, but that's just not how Michael John works. That's not his way of working. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and that certainly is, sort of like the mainstay of what was great about the musical theater in, the 40s and 50s. You did have a lot of wonderful songs, and in those days, too, because popular songs were these musical theater songs. They made it to the radio. They had as much airplay as a song today by Madonna would have. These were the pop standards of the day. And so that's the hard thing, too, with musical theater now, is we're not in that sort of mainstream anymore.
Who is Michael John Lacusa, and what's he working on next?
Michael John was actually just nominated for 4 Tonys for Marie Christine and Wild Party. So that's his. The Wild Party is a show that he has running on Broadway right now, starring Mandy Patinkin and Toni Collette and Eartha Kitt. And actually, he's writing an opera for, Chicago Lyric. I may be wrong in that, but I'm pretty sure that's his next piece that he's working on. So he's someone who, is just one of those new young sort of guys out there just going at it, even though, they're constantly being told, no, you need to learn to write within the form of musical theater.
And what's holding it back? Why didn't Marie Christine make it?
Well, there's a lot of, I think there were a lot of variables with that. I think one of them was that a lot of people weren't sort of willing to accept the form of the piece and didn't quite accept it. Like we talked about before, in terms of, well, this is more of an opera, so what's it doing on musical theater, ground? This is an opera. And there were some people who just didn't like the subject matter, thought it was too dark. It's Medea, but a lot of people just, that's nothing to sing about. Just timing, too. We opened at the same time as Contact, and then Contact came in and took our theater. So we had no theater to go to. So, but there were passionate followers, and we had passionate people who really, really believed in the piece. And that's the other thing that I can tell, that this piece will stand up to the test of time, because we had passionate, passionate fans of the piece and passionate, passionate detractors, people who just couldn't stand it. Mm. So when a piece becomes sort of that divisive and people have that sort of visceral of a response, that it's touched a chord somewhere.
Yeah, and it'll live.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe even as House of Flowers.
You want to talk about, like, Kurt Weill's Seven Deadly Sins bombed. It bombed when it premiered in Paris in the 30s. It was a big failure. And it wasn't until Lenya brought it back to Britain in the 50s that it started to gain the notoriety and the acceptance,
And then there are singers like Mabel Mercer and maybe you who scour those, who sort of find all kinds of bargains in those failed musicals and make them all over again.
Actually, there's a lot that I'll be doing in my concert tonight of sort of songs from shows that sort of flopped, but beautiful, incredible songs nonetheless. So,
for example?
There's a song called Learn to Be Lonely from the non-hit musical A Doll's Life, which was the musical sequel to A Doll's House. And it bombed, but there was some incredible music and, lyrics by Comden and Green, music by Larry Grossman. Yeah, but you don't know about it, do you? No.
We'll learn tonight. 1-800-423-8255. The connection with Audra McDonald, spoken of as she's going to do for musical theater what Yo-Yo Ma is supposed to do for classical music. Revive it. Sell it. Be it. Do it all. 1-800-423-8255. Makes the connection. Scott is calling from Truro, Massachusetts.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Scott.
I have a radio program on the community station in Provincetown. It's a jazz program, and I've been playing a lot of the selections from Audra's 2 solo albums.
Thank you.
And my listeners call and tell me when they play the album at home, as do I, we cry. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
The work is incredible. And I was wondering if you'd comment about the song Baby Moon, which I thought, the first time I heard it, I had to sort of stop what I was doing and sit down and play it again to make sure I heard it right. But
yeah,
just a stunning song.
That's actually, it's a song by Adam Gettle, another song by Adam. And he told me that he was writing a song for me, for my album, and all he had was just sort of like an idea that, he wanted to talk about what a woman feels like right when they're 9 months pregnant, right when they're just about ready to have the baby. What's going through their head? What fears are going through the head? What's the excitement? What's and so, this, single, straight guy was able to get inside a woman's heart and head and sort of spin this beautiful lullaby to an unborn child. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of, like, specificity of songs. You know, it's not just, ooh, I can't wait till I have a family someday. It's like, there's a life living inside of me, and how do I get ready to welcome it into the world? And I have a hard time getting through that song without crying, too, actually.
Scott, it's a wonderful suggestion that we've queued it up. Let's listen to Baby Moon.
I think the crux of it right there, that this is a woman saying, I'm not a hero. I'm not like the mothers I see, and I don't even know any lullabies, and all I can do is sing to you the sound of what you mean to me. And that's where he made it very personal for me, you know, so.
Scott, thank you. Wonderful suggestion.
Thanks, Scott.
1-800-423-8255 makes the connection with Audra McDonald. Joan is on the line.
Hi there.
Hello, Joan.
Hey, I just want to say, very timely song. I'm 8 months pregnant.
Oh.
And,
see, everything connects.
You know it. And actually, Audra said something about how these songs touch a chord. And I called my father. He and I are, there's a 45-year difference between us. And, you know, it's tough to bridge that kind of distance in age. But the one thing he was always able to give me, was living room and American musicals. And let me tell you, Audra, I found you by accident on a radio, and I searched you out to say, who is this person? And you helped me give something back to my father.
Oh, wow.
And it was so amazing that he's an old guy, you know, he's still stuck on Alfred Drake and stuff. And, you know, and you were able to, you know, you gave me something to give to him.
Oh,
and the one thing about these American musicals, you sing them in such a way that people, it's like someone who knows how to say Shakespeare in a way that you understand the text.
Mm-hmm.
You sing songs so people understand deeply the lyrics. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Joan. When do you do?
End of July.
Oh, good luck.
Thank you.
Joan, it'll all go well. It'll be a great baby.
Yeah.
Thank you. 1-800-423-8255.
Can I just say something about what Joan said? In terms of the lyric is always something that's been very important to me. And in my sort of passion about these new composers, I certainly realize that all of us are standing on the shoulders of the generations before, and we're obviously heavily influenced by them. You know, Sondheim and before that, I think, with these composers.
Well, you can certainly feel the Sondheim touch in everything here,
mm-hmm.
lyrics and music, don't you feel?
Absolutely. Actually, I just did the concert version of Sweeney Todd with the New York Philharmonic last week, and learning what I had to learn for, I played the Beggar Woman, was a lot like learning these new composers. I sort of felt like it was the same sort of difficulty in getting it just right. But once you did, understanding just the perfect synthesis between the music and the lyrics.
1-800-423-8255. Wendy is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Wendy.
Chris, great show as always.
Thank you.
Miss McDonald, I am a great admirer of yours, but I am new as a fan.
Thank you.
And I too, like Joan, searched you out when I heard you on a previous radio program. Quick question, though, to you. You've talked a little bit about crossing over from one medium to the other,
mm-hmm.
the comments of going from theater to opera, etc. And I just wondered whether you would ever consider, as some of the other great talents, of going into film, and what would keep you from going into film or going into
Well, it's certainly something that I've been considering and something that is probably going to happen a bit in the future. There's nothing that really keeps me from it, except for the fact that with Hollywood and with television and film, there are a few more barriers that you have to overcome, especially as an African-American performer. There's not quite the same palette available to an African-American performer as there is, say, to a Caucasian performer. There's still quite a lot of stereotyping that happens, and so it's very difficult to branch out and find your right niche if you're not exactly the stereotype they're looking
for. What can't you do, for example?
You can't play like a romantic, well, it's starting to happen a little bit with indie films and things like that, but to play like just a romantic lead, that's very rare that you find that. Or to play someone who's not necessarily a crackhead or who's not just a real sort of streetwise, wisecracking sort of fun best friend. You know, that's slow going, although because of the indie movement and more independent studios getting their work out there and seeking out new talent, that's starting to change a little bit. But I think they're much farther behind than musical theater. And musical theater, I still think, is a little bit behind opera, with opera being the farthest ahead in terms of colorblind
casting.
Yeah, musical
theater was late enough in a way. But you were also instrumental in colorblind casting, and I should think in certain branches of movies it would be even easier. What do you think?
Well, hopefully. You know, I mean, certainly with Carousel, Nick Heitner was quite courageous to just say, who cares? You know, it's whoever is right for the role is going to play the role, even though, you know, it's a provincial little town, seaside town in New England, you know. So, but I think film will get there. It's just a lot further behind.
Wendy, thank you. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Audra McDonald connection. I'd like to hear one more of the new composers, or composers for the new American theater. We haven't heard Ricky and Ian Gordon's
yes.
work.
He's more of a classical composer. If there's, he's to the left of that line, more towards the classical side.
Toward the opera side?
Yes.
He wrote, and you recorded his Song for a Dark Girl, with a text by Langston Hughes. Let's listen. Song for a Dark Girl. Songs and the old songs come out so highly individual. I wondered, who taught you how to sing that song, or how many times did you look at a score and sing it by yourself before you knew how you wanted to do it?
With a song like that, actually, all of my songs I always take to my acting coach, and we approach them as monologues. And that song was very easy to come to vocally, just because it was written in such a way that, you know, as she's this woman is having to deal with the fact that her lover has been lynched. And just going from the numbness of it to the actual explosion of anger, you know, just sort of crying out towards God and the world, why is this happening? Ricky was brilliant in putting that on, you know, the numbness of it in the very low part of the voice. And then when she's crying out and screaming just sort of to the world at the like sort of the tippy top part of my voice. And so it was just a perfect synthesis of, you know, the drama and the music. And there was little for me to do but to just sort of sit in that moment. And actually with this particular song, we do it in my concert. We'll be doing my concert tonight with in conjunction with another song written by Irving Berlin called Supper Time, which Ethel Waters made very famous. From S. Thousand's Cheer, and it's the same sort of thing. It's a woman whose husband has been lynched and is now having to deal with the fact that she's got to take care of the kids and feed them dinner, and how am I going to get through my life now without my husband? And, you know, these songs are written 70 years apart, very similar in style and in subject matter, and it's a great sort of way to show the bridge between the old and the new. So it's one of my favorite songs, actually.
1-800-423-8255, the Audra McDonald connection. Carrie is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's a pleasure to hear Audra's voice. I'm actually a classically trained singer and a voice teacher, and I never listen to musical theater because it grates on my ears to hear that kind of singing. But I love the way she handled it, and I was just wondering if she felt... you could have the range of ability without having had the classical training to do the kinds of things that you do.
Oh, absolutely not. I think I absolutely needed that sort of classical training in order to understand the higher part of my voice, and certainly the passaggio as a voice teacher. I'm sure that deals with the middle part of the voice on up. But without having had the sort of musical theater background to come from, I don't think I could have found necessarily all the dramatic sort of juiciness with songs and the freedom to go for that if I hadn't come from musical theater. I'm not saying that that's how it works for every singer. A lot of classical singers, that is their way of getting their dramatic side out, is through the sort of classical style. But for me, the classical training helped to cultivate my voice in a way, but the musical theater helped to bring the soul to it, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, but it also reminds me of the first singer you mentioned, Sarah Vaughan. Gunther Schuller spoke of her as the greatest musical instrument of the 20th century. What in the world? People always wondered, you know, and of course she could have done opera, she could have done anything, but what did she not know about the voice that she didn't find a way somehow miraculously to teach herself?
Well, I think Sarah Vaughan, I mean, I can't speak for her, but I think she didn't necessarily want to go into opera, but I think she knew she could have. I mean, I think all of that that was just all natural instinct on her part, you know. But the voice was huge. I have yet to hear a voice that huge in all parts of the range.
I think we... I'll agree on that. Audra McDonald, it's a great pleasure to meet you and a privilege to have you on the program.
Likewise, thank you.
Audra McDonald is singing tonight at Sanders Theater on the Harvard campus. It's been sold out from the moment it was conceived. But you can continue this and any other Connection conversation on our website at theconnection1word.org. Our website producer is Jim Norris. We had help today from Michael Garth, John Hoder, Nahani Rouse, Rebecca Smuckler, and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Hitesh Hatti, John Holt, Jill Kaufman, Amy McDonald, and Keith Shields. Mary McGrath is our senior producer. We're going out on Audra McDonald's rendition of what some people called Barbara Streisand's song, Any Place I Hang My Hat Is Home, from her CD, How Glory Goes. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Log on to WBUR.org this afternoon to hear Fannie Mae Chairman and CEO Franklin Raines as he addresses the National